Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I mentioned in a previous episode that my wife and I, we have a one little person at home, Ezra, who is coming up on his 7-month birthday soon. And we've up to now decided to keep him at home. In other words, he's not in in daycare yet. We made this decision for a couple of reasons. One, I think we both enjoy having him around. And as we're both working from home, at least part of the week, it's really nice to be able to be there for him and to have those really precious memories. The other reason, which is a bit more specific, I guess, is that there's been a measles scare in Jerusalem and in Israel with unvaccinated children dying of measles in the city and elsewhere in Israel. And the earliest age for the vaccine was 6 months. So we had a very kind of specific reason that up to 6 months, we felt it was safer to keep him at home. But I guess now that we've crossed that threshold and we're looking towards the next little part of our lives, especially with an upcoming move now, we're thinking about stuff like baby-proofing, and socialization, because we want to put him in daycare for sure at some point. We're just not sure exactly when that point will be, especially with everything going on in our lives at the moment. So what I'd like to talk about, Herman and Corin, is there, the whole world of parenting education is really loaded with different opinions about every topic, and I'm sure there is loads about this. But you two excel at picking the evidence-based facts from that vast swathe of information, which is why I thought it would be good to ask you, what does it say? What I'd like to know really, Herman and Corin, is the following. Regardless of when the experts might say that this is the latest that is generally recommended, up to that point, before that point, what are the guidelines in terms of making sure, let's say, that the baby sees enough of the world, meets other babies, talks, and has those experiences that are really important for connection and bonding, so that even if they're staying at home for a little longer than another baby, let's say, they're getting sufficiently diverse experiences and socialization that's considered reasonable. And are there any signs that are generally, besides your own signs, of course, namely, if you feel like you're overloaded or you can't safely monitor them with your life setup and resources and physical space. So science on both from the child and from yourself in terms of, because I think that's really important to consider as well, how you're doing, that might say, okay, it's time now to get them into daycare or playcare. Is that a word, playcare? Herman and Corin, let's talk about that important question of parenting. When to put a child into daycare, what age, and in the time before that, what can one do to make sure that they're having as happy and healthy as possible an early life experience as you can provide as a parent? Over to you.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of My Weird Prompts. We are sitting here in Jerusalem on a chilly January afternoon, and I am joined, as always, by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, present and accounted for. It is good to be here, Corn. I have been looking forward to this one because it touches on something very close to home for us.
It really does. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier today. He's been thinking a lot about his son Ezra, who is just about to hit that 7-month mark. For those who do not know, Daniel and his wife have been keeping Ezra at home for the first part of his life.
Which is a very common choice. But Daniel mentioned some specific reasons, including past measles outbreaks we've seen in Jerusalem. It is a serious consideration when you have an unvaccinated infant. Ezra is too young for his first MMR vaccine. He is essentially relying on the cocoon immunity of those around him.
It is a scary time for parents of infants. But now that Ezra is getting a bit older and the world is opening up for him, Daniel is asking the big questions. How do we ensure he gets enough socialization while staying at home? And when do we know it is time for daycare?
It is a massive topic. Parenting is one of those areas where everyone has an opinion, but the actual science and developmental psychology can sometimes get lost in the noise. I am excited to dig into the evidence-based side of this with you today, Korn.
Let's start with the first part of his question. If a baby is staying at home longer than the typical 3 or 6 months, what are the guidelines for ensuring they get enough socialization and diverse experiences? Because I think there is a misconception that socialization for a baby means playing with other babies.
You hit the nail on the head right away, Korn. That is probably the biggest myth in early childhood development. For a 7-month-old like Ezra, socialization is not about peer-to-peer interaction in the way we think of it for adults or even for 5-year-olds. At 7 months, babies are still in what we call the dyadic phase of social development. Their primary social world is their caregivers.
Right. So the socialization they need is actually high-quality interaction with the people they already know.
Exactly. The most important social experience for a baby under the age of 1 is what researchers call serve and return interactions. It is like a game of tennis. The baby makes a sound or a gesture that is the serve, and the parent responds with a smile, a word, or a touch that is the return. This builds the neural architecture of the brain. You could have a baby in a room full of 20 other infants, but if they are not getting that serve and return from a consistent adult, they are not actually being socialized in a meaningful way.
That is fascinating. So, for Daniel and his wife, the most important social environment is already happening right there in their living room. But what about diverse experiences? Daniel was asking how to make sure Ezra sees enough of the world.
This is where we get into the concept of sensory and environmental scaffolding. While the primary bond is central, babies do benefit from a variety of stimuli. If Ezra stays in the same 4 walls every day, his brain becomes very efficient at processing that specific environment, but it might not be challenged to adapt to new sounds, sights, and smells.
So, what does a diverse experience look like for a 7-month-old without necessarily putting them in a high-risk environment like a crowded daycare?
It is simpler than people think. It is about passive exposure. Taking the baby on errands is actually a huge developmental win. A trip to the supermarket or a walk through the first station here in Jerusalem is a sensory explosion for a 7-month-old. There are bright colors, different temperatures in the frozen aisle, the sound of the checkout scanner, and the sight of many different faces.
I remember reading about the importance of seeing different faces. There is a window, right? Where they start to distinguish between us and them.
Yes, it is called the other race effect in developmental psychology, though that is a bit of a misnomer. It is really about perceptual narrowing. Around 6 to 9 months, babies become very good at recognizing the types of faces they see most often and start to lose the ability to distinguish between faces of groups they are not exposed to. So, the guideline here for Daniel would be, make sure Ezra sees a diverse range of people. Even if it is just from a safe distance in a stroller at a park or a busy street in the German colony or the Shuk.
That makes total sense. So, guideline number 1 is basically, your errands are their adventures. Narrate the world to them. If you are at the post office, talk about the stamps and the packages.
Precisely. The language exposure is critical. There was a famous study, though it has been refined over the years, about the 30 million word gap. It suggested that children from high interaction homes hear millions more words than those in low interaction homes. The guideline for homestaying parents is to be a sportscaster for your baby's life. Now I am putting on your blue socks. They feel soft, don't they? Now we are walking past the big green tree.
I love that. What about other babies, though? Is there any value in Ezra seeing other children his age at 7, 8, or 9 months?
There is value, but it is mostly observational. Around this age, babies start to become intensely interested in other small humans. They recognize that another baby is like me in a way that an adult is not. This is the beginning of social modeling. They watch how other babies move and vocalize.
So, a playgroup or a trip to Gazelle Valley where he can watch other kids from his stroller is enough?
Absolutely. You do not need play dates where the babies are expected to interact. They won't. They will engage in parallel play much later and cooperative play even later than that. At 7 months, just being in the presence of other children provides what we call novelty stimulus. It keeps their curiosity piqued.
Okay, so we have established that the socialization at home is mostly about the quality of the caregiver interaction and diverse passive exposure to the world. But let's move to the second part of Daniel's prompt, because this is where a lot of parents feel the most pressure. What are the signs from both the child and the parents that it is actually time to start daycare?
This is such a nuanced question because it is a three-way intersection between developmental readiness, parental well-being, and economic necessity. Let's look at the parental signs first because they are often ignored in favor of the child's needs, but they are just as important.
Right, because a burnt-out parent is not going to be providing those high-quality serve-and-return interactions we talked about.
Exactly. If a parent is feeling a sense of diminishing returns at home, where they are physically present but mentally and emotionally checked out, that is a huge sign. If the sportscasting has turned into silence, or if the parent is feeling a deep sense of isolation or a loss of their own identity outside of being a caregiver, it might be time.
I think for Daniel and his wife, since they both work from home at least part of the week, there is also the divided attention factor. Trying to be a full-time employee and a full-time parent simultaneously is a recipe for doing both poorly.
It is an impossible task. Research on multitasking shows it is a myth. We are just rapidly switching tasks, and that switching has a high cognitive cost. If the parent is constantly stressed because they are trying to answer an email while Ezra is crying for attention, the baby picks up on that stress. In that case, 4 hours of focused, high-quality daycare might actually be better for the child's stress levels than 8 hours of a distracted, stressed parent at home.
That is a powerful point. The quality of the time matters more than the quantity of the hours. Now, what about the signs from the child? How do you know when Ezra is ready or even needing more than what the home environment can provide?
One big sign is a stalling in curiosity. If a baby has completely mastered their home environment and seems consistently bored or frustrated despite the parent's best efforts to provide new toys or activities, they might be ready for a more complex environment.
But isn't frustration just a part of development? Like when they are trying to crawl?
Yes, but there is a difference between developmental frustration, the kind that leads to a new skill, and environmental boredom. When a child starts actively seeking out other children, reaching for them at the park, crying when they have to leave a group setting, or showing intense interest in the big kids, they are signaling a readiness for a wider social circle.
What about the age, though? Daniel asked for the recommended age. I have heard everything from the earlier the better for immunity to wait until they are three. What does the research actually say?
This is where I get really excited, Korn, because the data is actually quite specific, even if it is a bit controversial. If we look at 2024 research on cortisol levels, the stress hormone, we see some very clear patterns in infants in daycare.
Cortisol. So going to daycare is physically stressful for them?
It can be. Studies have consistently found that children under the age of one often show a significant rise in cortisol levels throughout the day when they are in a group care setting. At home, cortisol levels typically drop as the day goes on. This suggests that for very young infants, the group environment is a significant physiological stressor, what we call a high allostatic load, because they don't yet have the self-regulation skills to handle the noise and the absence of their primary attachment figure.
So, does that mean earlier is worse?
Not necessarily worse, but it means the quality of the daycare has to be incredibly high to mitigate that stress. We are talking about very low child-to-teacher ratios, ideally 1-3 for infants. However, the sweet spot that many developmental psychologists point to is around the 12-18-month mark.
Why then? What changes at a year or a year and a half?
A few things. First, the attachment bond is usually very secure by then. The child has object permanence. They know that when mom or dad leaves, they still exist and will come back. Second, their communication skills are starting to bloom. And third, they are moving. Once a child is walking, the world becomes an oyster. They can actively choose who to play near and what to explore.
That makes sense. At 18 months, they are more of an active participant in the daycare, whereas at 6 months, they are more of a passive recipient of the environment.
Exactly. There is also the NICHD study of early child care, which is the gold standard in this field. One of their key findings was that for children over the age of 2, high-quality center-based care actually provided a boost in cognitive and language development. But for children under 1, the most important factor was not the daycare, but the maternal sensitivity, the quality of the relationship at home.
So, for Daniel, if he can keep Ezra at home until he is a year old, he is likely hitting that developmental window where the stress of daycare starts to be outweighed by the benefits of social and cognitive stimulation.
Yes. If they have the flexibility, waiting until 12 months is often seen as a great balance. It allows for the primary attachment to solidify. It gets the child past the most vulnerable stage for many illnesses, especially considering past measles outbreaks in Jerusalem. And it aligns with the child's natural increase in social curiosity.
Let's talk about that measles point for a second. We live here, and we know how dense Jerusalem is. In a daycare setting, you have children from all over the city. Daniel's concern about measles outbreaks is very real. Does the socialization benefit of daycare outweigh the health risk in a situation like this?
From a purely developmental standpoint, no. A few months of delayed socialization at age 7 months will have zero long-term negative impact on a child's social skills. The human brain is incredibly plastic. However, a severe case of measles can have permanent consequences. In a public health crisis, the safety guideline always trumps the socialization guideline for infants.
That is a really important takeaway. Daniel shouldn't feel like he is stunting Ezra's growth by keeping him safe during an outbreak.
Not at all. In fact, by keeping him home and safe, they are ensuring he has the health and stability to enjoy socialization later. There is no socialization debt that accumulates in infancy. You don't miss the window if you don't start daycare at 6 months.
That is such a relief to hear. So, if they do decide to wait, let's say they aim for the 12-month mark, how can they prepare Ezra for that transition while they are still at home?
Definitely. This is where you can start to introduce alloparenting, the concept of being cared for by someone other than the primary parents. If Daniel and his wife can have a grandparent or a trusted friend watch Ezra for 2 hours a week while they are in another room, it teaches Ezra that other adults can meet his needs.
It's like training wheels for daycare.
Exactly. Another thing is to start following a daycare-like schedule at home. Most professional settings have a very predictable rhythm: snack, play, nap, lunch. If Ezra is already used to a predictable routine, the transition will be much less jarring.
I want to go back to the signs from the parent part. We talked about burnout, but what about the guilt factor? I think a lot of parents feel like they should stay at home as long as possible, even if they are miserable.
That is the martyrdom trap. The research on parental self-efficacy, the belief that you are doing a good job, shows that it is a huge predictor of a child's well-being. If a parent feels like they are failing, or if they are deeply unhappy, that radiates to the child. A happy, fulfilled parent who spends 4 high-quality hours with their child in the evening is better for that child's development than a frustrated, resentful parent who is with them 24 hours a day.
That is a great way to put it. The ecosystem approach. Now, Herman, if Daniel starts looking at places in Jerusalem, what are the green flags he should be looking for specifically regarding socialization?
Green flag number 1, are the teachers talking with the babies? Do they get down on the floor at the baby's eye level? That is where the serve and return happens. If the teachers are standing up and just monitoring the babies while they play, that is a red flag. You also want to see defined spaces rather than one giant noisy room, and you want to hear that the staff turnover rate is low. Attachment is built on consistency.
So, to summarize, look for the 12 to 18 month window if possible. Prioritize parental mental health and child safety, especially considering past measles outbreaks, and look for high-quality, stable interaction when you do choose a center.
Precisely. And remember that Ezra isn't going to be behind because he didn't have a playmate at 7 months. He is exactly where he needs to be, in a safe, loving home with parents who care enough to ask these questions.
That's a great point, Herman. I think we've really unpacked the weirdness of this prompt. It's one of those things that feels like it should be intuitive, but the data is actually quite complex.
It really is. And I think it's important to acknowledge that every family's right time is different. There's no one-size-fits-all answer, but there are definitely better ways to handle the transition.
Well, I hope this gives Daniel and Ezra some good food for thought. It sounds like they are doing a great job already just by being so intentional about it.
Absolutely. Ezra is a lucky kid, and hey, once he is vaccinated, I'm sure he'll be the star of whatever playgroup he joins.
I have no doubt. Before we wrap up, I want to remind everyone that if you're finding these deep dives helpful, we'd really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show.
It really does. We've been doing this for hundreds of episodes now, and it's the community that keeps us going. If you want to send us your own weird prompt, head over to myweirdprompts.com.
Yeah, we have a searchable archive there if you want to fall down a rabbit hole of child psychology or any of the other hundreds of topics we've covered. Thanks to Daniel for sending this in. Well, that's it for today's episode of My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
And I'm Herman Poppleberry.
We'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone.
So, Herman, I was thinking about what you said regarding the sportscasting for babies. Do you think we do that for each other on this podcast?
Now, Korn is leaning into the microphone. He is asking a meta question about our dialogue.
Exactly. We are basically just social scaffolding for our listeners.
I love it. We are the ultimate serve and return team. Let's go see if Daniel needs any help with Ezra. I think I heard him waking up from his nap.
Good idea. I'll bring the blue socks.
Perfect. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back soon with another prompt.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.